Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Wisdom Walk on Black Hole Radio. I am your host and guide, Judge Pomeree Enteroma. And tonight, I am very, very blessed to have here at my home a dear friend who helped save my life many years ago when I needed a friend to do that. She was really among a group of friends that helped save my life many years ago. And her name is Tamara Stark. And Tamara, please say hi to my listening audience and tell them a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you, Marie. It's such a pleasure to be here. I have had the blessing and the sacred experience in my life of doing a friendship walk with Jojo Pa, Maria, as originally known to me, this is Maria, and to watch her transformation as she became the spirit guide, the shaman, the wise woman that she is today. And so I just feel as though we were meant to connect.
Yes.
We connected
yes.
professionally and then personally.
Yes. Yes.
And even though I'm now living in Arizona, Maria and I have spent many good evenings together and shared many of life's ups and downs,
and
mostly the path of love.
Exactly.
And and part of my walk with that is, Maria knows, is I moved from Milwaukee, where I knew Maria, and lived in North Carolina, and then was called to go to Arizona to take care of my parents.
Sure.
And in that process, I was completing my certification as a life and executive coach. So I'm doing coaching and consulting with incredibly powerful leaders, because I have a belief that the more extraordinary the leader, the more extraordinary the organization, the more extraordinary the results, and the more extraordinary our communities will become.
Sure.
So I have felt very blessed to have that be the way in which I serve the world professionally, but more importantly, to serve the world from my heart and just by my presence and seeing the divine in the presence of each of us. So, Maria, it's a great privilege for me to be with you this evening and with your listeners.
Shay, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, Tammy, you are one of the few people, you, Queen Noor, just really a handful of other people that I met early on here in Milwaukee who were open to spirituality and to finding a way to integrate that into not only your life, but into the way in which we were presenting ourselves to the community and doing our professional work.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
And even though I believe almost, you know, most of us have a spiritual foundation, we didn't give ourselves in the past much permission to talk about it.
That's right.
And to share it really
or
deeply.
Or express it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. And on top of that, to support each other in our spiritual growth and in our faith journey.
Yes.
And, you know, finding the place that resonates for us in our life and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, going to those deeper places of really understanding what it means to be a spirit in human form.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is a special treat. Tammy really just came to have a visit here in Milwaukee and reconnect with old friends, support a friend whose daughter's getting married. She didn't plan to be on the radio tonight, but here she is.
But with Maria, they don't surprise. And I always look forward to that.
So tonight we are rotating once more into the theme of the age of illumination. And our topic for tonight is about rapid and radical changes for a postmodern renaissance. Now, for those of you who may be listening for the first time, Wisdom Walk is what I call a personal development resource. It is the newest component of my ministry, which is any pain that is not transformed will be transferred. So the essential goal of my shows is to support all of you who are listening to learn how to recognize and release the pain that is blocking you from having your happy endings, because it's never too late to have your happy endings. The show does rotate through five themes, the Age of Illumination, which we're doing tonight. Next week will be Wisdom for Men. Then there's Wisdom for Women, Healing Family Wounds, and one of my favorites, Enlightenment and a Movie. So every Monday night, there will be lots of inspirational information, knowledgeable and spirited guests, and time for call-ins, which we will do at our breaks. So I thank you for joining me to explore the inner landscape of our existence in order to discover the true treasure of being human. So part of my format for the show, Tammy, is I always start off honoring the ancestors.
Yes.
And, you know, ancestors are the persons whose shoulders we are standing on, the persons who we are beholding to for who and where we are today. And, of course, I'm not just talking about those ancestors who gifted us with love and support. I'm also talking about the ones who disappointed us, neglected us, or physically harmed us, because our souls have grown as a result of both the good and the bad. So I want to share about an ancestor who was a family friend of ours named Miss Norma Mathis,
And Tammy, I'd like you to think about an ancestor, blood related or not, that you'll share about.
Yes, thank you.
So let me tell you all a little bit about Miss Mathis, as we called it. And we felt a kinship to her as a family right away because my family name is Matthews, and she was Mathis. So right away there was like, oh, okay, maybe there's some family going on here. And this was a woman who was single. She was an older woman, a mature woman. She was not married. And back in those days, which was early 1960s, you know, a woman being single and not married was really considered an old maid. But Miss Mathis had this mission to make sure that the children in the community could get access to Sunday school. She played the piano and organ, and so she played at this church. It was a Methodist church, a little teeny church on Staten Island with a red door, and I think it was called Bethel, the Bethel Church. But we didn't go upstairs. We were actually down in the basement. And Miss Mathis, every Sunday, would drive around to the front of her house and blow the horn, and we'd go running out into her car, and she would have already picked up a couple of other kids from off of the hill, as it was called. And we would go into this church basement, and she would teach us the stories from the Bible. And sometimes we would be coloring, sometimes we would be listening to stories. You know, there'd be some kind of arts and crafts thing. Sometimes we'd be preparing to do some singing for Christmas in the upstairs church. I remember that. But this became like my introduction to church and really the only kind of formal type of church going that I did. And many times when she would drive us home and we would be the last ones that she'd drop off, and we would be my brother and sister, Cheryl and Ralph, she'd come in and join in the community gathering that happened at my grandparents' house every Sunday because she had four of her six children that lived around her. No, really, three of her six children that lived around her, including my mom. And she and my grandfather would get up at 5 and make biscuits and coffee and until at least 12 noon, sometimes 1. People from the community would just come in and out and join in on the conversation and say hi. So many Sundays, Miss Mathis would stay and do that. She was a real model, if you will, for us around how you as an adult need to give back to the community. Her commitment to doing that every Sunday to make sure that, you know, we got access to learning about religion, learning about faith, just really, really touched us very deeply. And I know she truly has contributed a lot to my philosophy and understanding about that you take care of the children and that you do for the children. So, Ms. Mathis, I'm calling out to you, and I'm just thanking you so much for being among my ancestors and guides that supports me in my community work and the community building work that I do as well. Ashe.
Ashe. It would be fun to meet her, to have her right in the
room.
Oh,
my goodness.
I feel like she's with us already.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, those simple acts of kindness, picking somebody up and taking them to be a part of a community so you can create a bigger community.
Exactly.
You know, and what fun you all had and the anticipation of going with her and being with her.
Yeah.
Oh, that excitement that we create when we're around people that extend love.
Yes.
That just say yes to
yes.
the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that word yes, about how important it is to just say yes.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there's kind of a challenge that I was reading about, you know, for 48 hours, just say yes to every request that you get.
I like the yes man.
Because life changes.
Exactly.
Because we just engage differently than if we... I read a quote at this workshop I was at. One of the people who sponsored had a quote in his office about, you know, what would happen if we said yes when we can and no only when we have to.
Mm.
So often, we do the reverse. We say yes only when we have,
to.
No. And, you know, what a great thing in life to just say yes, not only to life, but to others to request.
Exactly.
And to see what would happen if people said yes to our request.
Exactly.
How magnificent that would be. And I've been thinking about your question of, you know, whose shoulders am I on, you know, that, you know, there were, when I grew up, we moved a lot. So my sense of the elders and the communities, I remember some friends of my parents. I don't know that these would be considered ancestors, but I was thinking about this because they were the MacPhails.
Hmm.
And my parents and the couple were very close with this couple, and their kids were about our age. But I remember when what fun we had, and there were a couple of stories I recall where she was a fabulous, fabulous seamstress.
Yeah.
And my mother was not a seamstress, and so we had a sewing machine, but it rarely got pulled out of the cupboard. So I would go over and watch Bertha. I know, isn't that a great old name, Bertha? I would go over and watch Bertha sew. And so one time was Halloween, and one of her girls was older than me, and she said, now you can wear this costume. She had made a candy cane costume.
Mm.
And the candy, you know, that your head was like this big, you know, turned up candy cane, and red crepe paper on it. So I'm walking around the neighborhood with my trick-or-treat bag and my candy cane outfit, and it rained.
Oh my goodness.
And the red crepe paper started dripping all over this beautiful costume. And I was so upset. I was in tears. I go back to Bertha. Bertha, I ruined this costume. Bleeding. You know, and I was a licked candy cane. That's all I wanted. So, you know. And she was so gracious and so loving. And it was like, oh, honey, it doesn't matter. I could make another one or... You know, it just doesn't matter. But I was so worried. But, you know, she just responded with such great love and just gave me a big hug and said everything was okay. And then George, her husband, was very funny, but he loved the outdoors. And when we lived there, we would go, as families, we would go get Christmas trees together and chop them down.
Wow.
And after we moved to the eastern part of Montana, which is very hot and dry and not too many Christmas trees around, George, for 4 years, because there were four, I have three siblings, two brothers and a sister. So every year, George would get a Christmas tree, put it on a train in Three Forks, Montana, and ship it to Glendive.
Oh my goodness!
And he would write a letter to one of us, and with this, you know, from this mystical tree elf who was sending this Christmas tree. And after my parents died, I found one of the letters that he'd written to my brother, Kirk, that we had saved, thank goodness. And it was just magical to pull that out and to remember the thoughtfulness, but also just whenever we got that tree, besides the fact that it was beautiful and we had this lovely Christmas tree, it just brought back this flood of memories of what it means to be in a community of people who love you and support you. And, you know, of course, over the years, as, you know, as things happen, we lost a lot more and more touch with them. But I still have those great memories of them as a family.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means, you know, it doesn't matter how long you have that relationship.
That's right.
It can be 2 weeks, it can be 20 years, it can be two lifetimes.
Mm-hmm.
That it's the love that passes that builds it up.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, and we had lots of fun. So that's what came up for me. Thank you for asking.
I say. So, moving right along, tonight I'm going to share with you some ancient wisdom from the Dagara tribe of Burkina Faso regarding 2012 as a nature year, a year for rapid and radical changes. I believe, along with many others around the world, that we're going through a postmodern renaissance, and I want to talk to you about what that is, and how this new wave of consciousness is challenging old beliefs and institutions. And as a result, we really have some unlimited opportunities to create a healthier and happier existence for all human beings. That's a mouthful. So let me share the Dagger Wisdom. I know there are some of you out there listening that know me, and so you know that I work with the spirit medicine and with this medicine wheel that has these five elements, and that this cosmology is used as a tool to really help us, first of all, know that we have purpose, that we come born fully holding inside of us why it is that we're here and what it is that we're here to do, and that it is the job of community to help support us in remembering that purpose. So the Dagra tribe believes that each person is born through one of those five elements. And the elements are fire, water, earth, mineral, which is stone, bones, and shells, and then nature, which is plants, animals, and humans. And each of these elements, they believe, a person is born through. And so it gives, a foundation for your existence. So, for example, that what that means then, in Dagara traditional tribal philosophy, not only is no one born without purpose, without value, no one is disposable. Okay. Because that cosmology says that there is no hierarchy, because fire is not better than water. It's just different. And you need all five of those elements in order to have harmony, balance, fulfillment, and purpose in community.
Yes.
So unlike in our culture, where we do believe in disposable people, which is exemplified by the number of people who are incarcerated in this country, you know, in this indigenous culture, that just would never be, because you would realize, oh, my God, if I take and I put these people away, if I don't work on trying to figure out how to help them heal what it is that has them not doing their purpose, then the community loses. There's going to be something missing, something absent from the community. So for the sake of those of us in the West, my teacher, Maladoma Somme, through the help of his elders, actually had a way to translate for those of us in the West to know what our elemental insignia, it is, what the element is that we were born through. And so the numbers, if your birth year ends in the numbers 3 or 8, that means that you were born in a nature year. So 1953, 1988, and, of course, 2013, because it ends in a 3. It's a nature year. And a nature year, just to pull for you directly a quote from my teacher, Maladoma Somme, from his book, The Healing Wisdom of Africa. He says, the element of nature signifies the principle of change. It is transformation, mutation, adjustment, flexibility, cyclicality, life, death, and magic. It is my sense that if incorporating any of these five elements poses a challenge to modernity, then the challenge posed by nature is the most difficult of all. And that's because, of course, in our culture, we really, really do not like change. And it's interesting because, you know, we're living at such a fast pace in this postmodern world where things really are changing, you know, so rapidly all the time. So there's this paradox because we're in this time of really rapid and radical change in 2013, but yet we really have kind of a, you know, a hesitation to it, a block to it, you know. We're afraid of it. We're actually afraid of change. So I have a friend who is a nature person. Her name is Suzanne Lozoni. Hopefully she might be listening tonight. She might call in. But she had sent me an email earlier today, and being a nature person, she wrote a little message that that I want to share because it's so right on. And she says, rapid and radical change often creates immense stress for people and animals. The question, of course, is how to deal with the stress. The only way I can possibly get through all that has happened to me is to stay in gratitude for the blessings in my life, the ones I recognize as well as, and perhaps especially, the ones of which I am not even conscious. Life is about change, and change brings sometimes wonderful new awarenesses. If one can move out of the fear, change provokes and embrace it. It is the dance of the devil that is our best teacher, our ultimate personal guru. you know, a thing about the nature year is that it is the cosmic creative expression of all the four fundamental elements of fire, water, earth, and mineral. So when all of those elements come together, you get this nature.
Right.
Because inside of us and animals as well is all of those elements. We all have our fire, which is our chi. We're 99.5% water when we're born. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. So the earth is our skin, you know, our space suit that we live in. And the mineral is our skeletal system, you know, which also includes our DNA. So nature's evidence of this evolutionary impulse of our universe, and it's cosmically designed to make us remember that we are real. So with a nature year comes this energetic, if you will, this consciousness raising about real, what is real versus what is not. And, you know, nature has this kind of trickster energy. So it's masking and unmasking. And so this is a year where a lot of masks get pulled off so that what is real can be revealed. And so to try and cover that up will create a lot of trouble, is the best way to put it. It'll create a lot of trouble. And in Western culture domains, we are so in need of and hungry for that. You know, the essential truth about being real is that you will change. You will be stretched and you will be grown, just as you will be born and you will die with or without your consent. You know, because in Western culture, and, you know, this goes back to the age of enlightenment, the age of reason, there's this belief that we are totally in control of the universe. You know, that we really are calling the shots, that we can control this and we can control that and we can control the weather. And so the nature year also brings that unmasking, like, really, really humans. You know? Well, let me show you who's really in control. And, you know, for those of us in the Midwest, I remember this was July 15th when summer finally hit. And now we're at July 29th, and the fall has returned.
Right. Well, this dance that we do with illusion is fascinating to me because as human beings, we have a desire to live in the fantasy. And the fantasy has created some great things for us, particularly showing up in film and theater and books. And it's also really great to have this experience of unmasking the authentic self. To me, it's not so much about unmasking in a way that we feel so vulnerable that we can't, that we don't feel safe, but it's about the unmasking that reveals our truth, reveals our authentic self. So for me, when I see it that way, you know, I can move into it in a more peaceful, loving, and actually curious. I think we can be curious.
We
exactly.
About the change in the same how.
Mm-hmm.
This is fascinating. This is not easy for me, but I'm curious about what this is going to be for me here. Well, what would happen if I allowed this and just opened to it? What would my life be like?
Okay.
Who would I be in this as opposed to resist? One of my favorite phrases is that what I resist persists.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And so the more that I resist that, as opposed to even moving into neutral of just observing and saying, okay, what is this? And then being a little curious and then actually getting excited and then saying, whoa, how could I make this work for me?
Exactly. You know, how is this working for
yeah,
me?
Exactly.
Open
yeah.
up and find that out.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tammy, I have in my notes here, you know, just what you're saying, that a nature year brings opportunities and challenges for peeling off the mask of our false selves and false belief systems while ushering in a rebirthing, and this is where the Renaissance piece comes in, of the truth of who we are despite our fears of the real. So, in essence, like you said, it's not this, you know, taking away the mask so that we're, like, less vulnerable.
Okay.
This is about how we have been, what and how we have been believing about ourselves.
Right.
About our relationships, about our institutions, that we're getting this opportunity now to see what is no longer serving, what's no longer true, and based on the changes that have happened,
mm-hmm.
you know. And this takes us into this postmodern Renaissance piece. And then I am going to jump back because I know there's probably some people out there saying, I'm a nature person. What does that mean for me for this year? So I will get back to
that. Well, I'm curious, too. And I think, like even preparing to come here, you know, it's like this whole thing of feeling like I'm, at the same time, I'm, you know, the foundation of my life is past. And I'm here
yes.
with you in the present. And so now, what's this huge opportunity for me for creating a new future?
Exactly.
And years like the nature year, if we actually work with it,
right,
really move us exponentially
that's right.
into a greater
that's
sense
right.
of ourselves and a greater future. So the more that we can get on board with it
yeah.
and really play with it some, you know, like
mm-hmm,
just adjust
mm-hmm.
some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to comment on one thing you said that is really important to me, which is I was reminded recently of this whole belief that beliefs are just thoughts that we continue to have.
Right.
So if that's true, and it's, you know, as trite as some of the stuff might sound about change your thoughts, change your life, you know, we can create new beliefs.
Oh,
it is
so true because, again, there's an evolutionary impulse in the universe.
Right.
It is designed to evolve. And so it's a gift that we have that we can shift up those belief systems when they're no longer working.
Right.
When they're no longer working.
Exactly.
So, I will give information now to the nature people before I go into the postmodern Renaissance, which we can even do at the break. So for nature people, the people who were born in the years ending in 3 and 8, the essence and the genius of them is that they have this amazing ability to change and evolve themselves. They have the power to shape-shift into whatever or whoever they want to become when they put their mind to it. Their psyche encompasses a passionate action and ancestral connectivity of the fire people, the emotional depth and peace-seeking of the water people, the caretaking and extension of unconditional love and support of the earth people, and the great social skills and gift for storytelling of the mineral folk. So juggling all of the elemental essences allows nature people to serve as tricksters or magicians for the other elements. They use humor, jokes, and joyful tricks to challenge us to pull off our false mask and face our reality. So during 2013, nature people will be both challenged and called upon to challenge pretense, falsehood, and that which is not in full alignment with the truth. Nature people were born in the year ending in the number 3. will be especially provided with multiple and frequent opportunities to transform away from the beliefs, ideologies, paradigms, environments, people, and even foods, which can no longer support the truth of who they are. From a spiritual perspective, nature people are being radically shaped into true stewards and powerful spokespersons for the natural world that the trees, plants, animals, landscapes, waterways, and humans need them to be. So it's a real powerful wake-up year,
right?
You know, where the nature people are really being called to step more fully into the truth of who they are and the role that they need to play. And, you know, that makes so much sense based on the stuff that has been going on the planet.
And it sounds like also to model and to lead some of us into that.
Exactly.
So that that they are the, they're going to be the fast-paced learners out there.
You got
that
it.
That then really help the support of others coming up behind them.
You got it.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the new children that are here. I've heard children as young as 5 declare, I'm here to save the whales, or I'm here to save the dolphins, or I'm here to save the trees, you know. It's like this clarity, they're coming with a clarity about what they're here to do and what they need to do. Yeah, and it's just amazing. It's just amazing that we're seeing this. I also, you know, just want to mention about the fact that other elemental people are also impacted in, you know, the year, even though it's not their elemental year. And it's really kind of common sense when you think about it, but I will, you know, just share. So, for example, you know, think about the relationship between nature and water, right? Nature requires water in order to continue to exist, you know. It's one of the elemental essentials. So there is a very strong relationship between, you know, the nature and the water just in terms of the existence. So water people definitely very affected in a nature year. So that their peacemaking abilities are going to be more called out. Their emotional intelligence abilities are going to be more called out because, of course, that is really so needed. Same thing with earth persons. The earth persons become very essential to the plants, the animals, and the humans. And so earth people, too, being called out to really expand their visions, their goal setting, and even their understanding about nurturance and community and abundance-mindedness, you know, thinking abundantly, letting go of that scarcity mentality, but being able to really believe that the universe has the capacity, you know, it's an infinite capacity to provide whatever it is that we need in order to be on purpose and do the work that we need to do. So, again, you know, earth people being really called out and called up to, you know, really do that expanded work. Now, mineral people in their relationship to the nature is that they kind of, you know, they're seeding. They seed the ground. They provide the minerals for that growth. So they're very essential to the nature people in that respect. So they're being asked to really also, you know, show up more, to let go of some of their rigidity, because they can be pretty rigid, and to spread themselves around a little more to really help with, you know, what the nature people need in terms of being energized, in terms of the communication pieces that are needed for the connectivity and networking, you know, the energetics. So they're being called on for that.
Uh-huh.
And then last but not least, fire people like me in a nature year. You know, nature is very, there's a fear of fire as well as an appreciation, I'll call it, for fire, because fire will come and it will transform. You know, it will transform. And, you know, what people don't realize is that enough is that all over the planet right now as we speak, there are fires going on in forested areas. Why? Because that fire is helping to really create a death and rebirth cycle so that new energies can grow in place of the old. So, for example, when animals die in the wood, their carcasses are there. If nothing happened to transform that, there could be a lot of disease. So fire will come along, burn up all the old carcasses, you know, burn off the dead wood, that kind of thing, and just create a more fertile ground, you know, for the nature to take place. So the fire and nature, you know, relationship is interesting. And so fire people are being called upon to really support with this kind of death and rebirth process.
Okay.
And, you know, fire people's whole thing is about seeing the truth, telling the truth, being the truth. Okay. And so fire people are being very challenged around that because we like to be liked. And when you have to tell the truth, people may not like you. They may not want to be around. You'll see you coming. Oh, God, here they come, you know. So we're really being challenged to be able to, you know, come out of our egos more and just be able to speak the truth and not be attached to how people respond, but just to understand that that's a gift, that, you know, hearing the truth is a gift, and you don't need to be attached in terms of how or what, how the person takes it or not. So that's a real challenge, though, for fire people, because especially in the West, most of them try to hide because they don't want to not be liked. So that's just a quick rundown of, you know, kind of the relationship to the other elements in this nature.
Well, and also because we are literally all of one mind.
Yes.
So hopefully we're not out of our mind. Hopefully we're in our mind. You know, but because of that, obviously whenever one group is primarily the focus right now of the energy shift, it is going to affect all of us in some way or another anyway. And so we also need to be prepared to support those people for whom it may be a more intense experience, but also to have, and also to grow and learn from our own experience within this. So it makes sense that all those other parts would be impacted as well. And this whole rapid, I think what is challenging for some people is the rapidity with which this is happening, you know, just that it doesn't ever seem to stop.
Yeah.
And that some of us don't even know how to take a breath in between. So this whole piece of needing to slow ourselves down in, you know, emotionally and spiritually so that we can regroup and let the world outside, you know, continue to move at a pace and knowing that we can set our own pace with it.
Yeah.
That it, you know, it's not going to consume us. We can take a breath, we can integrate, we can take the time we need to fully understand and to pick and choose which parts are for us and discard what isn't.
Yeah.
But sometimes we feel so swept along that we don't feel like we have any choice, almost like we're in a tsunami or something.
Exactly. And that's such an important point that you make, like really to stay mindful of the fact that we can choose to get still, to slow down, because these changes are so rapid and so radical. You know, there's just a lot of radical things going on that it is easy to feel victimized by the process that's going on. So to realize that, okay, let me just stop, let me just breathe, let me just contemplate, let me just open up, you know, let me learn, you know, let me surrender, and to just create a downtime to be able to stop and say, okay, what's really going on here? What is really happening here? That's such important advice, Tammy, and we don't hear that enough. You know, we're not hearing that enough. We're hearing, keep going, keep going, keep going. You know, like the little engine that could, and the little Energizer Bunny, you know, But really, to navigate through this type of process, this unmasking of falsehoods, of what no longer serves, it really does require taking that time, putting on the brakes, and just saying, oh, okay, let me stop. And I think that, you know, the weather is reflecting that because we get some time when the sun is shining this summer every day and you can go out and run around. But then, like here in Milwaukee, it got cold. It went down to 55 degrees at night. And then it stayed cloud covered like it was a fall day. And so there was just this message, stop, be still, go in, you know, and just take a moment to really reflect. So.
Well, and I think during times like this, you know, this really very creative experience that we're having, even though it can feel like challenging. It's really easy sometimes to grab onto the stuff that seems most obvious.
Yeah.
And to say, oh, that's the tidal, that's the wave I'm going to ride the shore. You know, as opposed to when we get quiet and we go, you know, that whole thing that, like, if, you know, if you've ever snorkeled or looked under the water, you know, that the water is real calm about 4 feet down underneath.
Yeah.
But it can be real turbulent on top.
Exactly.
And so if you just let yourself float on it and look below the surface, there's not only this great beauty, incredible beauty that we see, you know, but also there's this peace. And so,
yes.
You know, if all we do is grab the stuff that's on top, frequently that's not really the part that's the really sweet, sweet, beautiful part.
Right.
It's taking the time to just be with it, and underneath it, we may find stuff that where the goodies really are. You know, really reach down for those goodies inside us, as opposed to just doing the stuff that's on top of the head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you are listening to Wisdom Walk here on Black Hole Radio, and we're going to take a little break, and after we come back, we will be taking calls. The number is 323-927-2913, and we'll just give you some time to just go below the surface, look down and see what's there. We just put a lot of information out, so it'll give you a chance to just sit with it and do a little processing, and we should be back in about 5 minutes.
Welcome to Wisdom Walk on Black Hole Radio with your host, Jojoba Maria Mensaroma.
Welcome back to Wisdom Walk here on Black Hole Radio. I'm your host and guide, Jojoba Maria Mensaroma, and I'm here with my dear friend, Tamara Stark, and we're discussing the Age of Illumination, Rapid and Radical Changes for Postmodern Renaissance. The song you just heard was Loving You, made popular by the late Minnie Riperton back in the 70s. And it was played on the harp by Indigo Blue, who's a 15-year-old little sister from D.C. And she has another sister who also plays harp and some other family members. Isn't that wonderful?
Beautiful.
So beautiful. Just to remind you, we are taking callers at this time. The number is 323-927-2913. Tammy and I would love for you to join in on this conversation. And Brother Forrest, my engineer, during the break, told me that I forgot to share the birth year numbers for the other elements. So I want to take a moment and do that right now for those of you who are listening. So I'll start with fire. If your birth year ends in a 2 or a 7, you're a fire person. That would be like 1932 or 1957. And also, each of the elements also have a medicine color, so I'll share that too. And so for fire, it's red. Next is water. And those numbers would be 1 or 6. So if you were born like in 1981 or 1966, you would be a water person. And the medicine colors are blue and black. Black represents the really deep water. Moving right along to earth, the numbers are 0 and 5. So if you were born in 1960, or 1995, you would be an earth person, and the medicine color is yellow. Mineral, the numbers are 4 or 9, so it could be 64, or it could be 1979, and that's mineral. And the medicine color for mineral is white. And then, again, last but not least, nature is 3 or 8, and the medicine color for nature is green. And what I mean by medicine color is that when you wear these colors and any hue of the color, it actually does something to calm your soul and to help you feel better about yourself. And also the elements, too. If you engage with your particular element, like water people getting into water, that's medicine for you. Fire people, we're little fire bugs out there. We love building fires and being around a fire. Mineral people love having all those stones and bones around them. Earth people, walking barefoot on the earth, just medicine for you. And for nature people, of course, it's about being out in nature, connecting with the animals, connecting with the plants, and, of course, also connecting with humans. So the dagger of spirit medicine just gives us another way to become conscious of who we are as human beings, and I just love sharing this information. My dear friend Juanita did a couple of years ago a YouTube with me doing voice, and someone did some nice pictures over my voice doing kind of a, I think it's about a 37-minute little lecture about the medicine wheel. So if you'd like to access that, it's on YouTube. You can search by my name or search by Dagra Medicine Wheel, and her business is called Nzuzu, so you would also see that in the title. But I know that that is easily available for people who would like to hear me talk about this in more detail. So I want to jump now to this notion of a postmodern renaissance, because, again, this nature year is really putting us in a position
where we are being asked to really reconsider things. You know, when something's changing, you have to do some reconsideration. You have to say, wait a minute, the information that I had may not apply to this. You know, it's like when you get a new computer and you've been working on one that maybe is about 4 or 5 years old. You can't apply the same knowledge that you have with the old computer to the new one because there's going to be some new things, some new functions that you have to learn about. So that's kind of like where we're at in regards to this postmodern renaissance. And I call it a postmodern renaissance because it's similar to what was the popular renaissance that we talk about in Western culture, which happened, really began in the 14th century, but the one that we're most familiar with is the 15th century, with Michelangelo and the dome in Florence, the dome that was created in Florence, and it was just this big outgrowth of art and literature and culture, and it was like an honoring of the human body and an honoring of humans as individuals. And these were things that, you know, hadn't been going on before. And when I did a little research and a little remembrance of the history of that period, I found that there was something that occurred to kick off this growth in consciousness. And it really boils down to the invention of the printing press by Gutenberg in Germany. Because what Gutenberg's printing press is now able to do is to replicate the Bible, the Holy Bible, and give it out to the masses, the common folk, in a way that it wasn't before. Because previously, the Bible was kept in monasteries and in sacred places, and it was not available to everyone. And that's why people did have to depend on a priest or a holy person who would interpret the sacred writings, the sacred texts to the masses. So the church during the Middle Ages, especially the Dark Ages, wielded like supreme power over communities. When the Holy Bible gets into the hands of more common folk, this is when you begin to get some revolution. This is when you begin to get some pushback on the church. You get the rise of the Lutherans, right, Martin Luther, and other, you know, kinds of different interpretations of Christianity start to pop up. And it just breaks open into, you know, just a whole new way of kind of thinking and a whole new way, of course, of doing things. So when I was thinking about and also doing some research about this postmodern renaissance that we're in today, I found this guy called Terry Heaton, who calls himself a postmodern journalist, and he says this. I pulled this quote. I view postmodernism as the age of participation. Just as the Dark Ages were brought to a thankful end through an enlightening, the fruit of a closed culture of elites is coming to an end through the increasing ability of everyday people to share in the knowledge upon which the culture was built and is sustained. And, of course, he's talking about the World Wide Web and Google. Let's throw Google in there. In other words, it's very easy now for people to get access to information that before either you had to go to college or you had to know somebody that had access to a college library or, you know, an archive, or, you know, you had to be kind of the right person or doing what was considered a legitimate thing in order to get access to some information that nowadays you just Google it and bam, you've got access to it. So he's talking about how, you know, we can get emails directly from the White House, that we're no longer just spectators in our society, that we actually have now an opportunity to participate in ways that we didn't before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is unprecedented in the history of humanity.
You're right, and we don't know yet exactly how all that's going to manifest.
Exactly.
Or what change it will cause. But we do know that it's already causing a great change just in how people communicate and who we can communicate with. And the fact that you and I were talking a little bit before the show about the idea that even if you live in a culture that is not a democracy or may even be an oppressive culture,
right,
you can participate in the world now.
Yes.
Outside of those walls.
That's right, that's right.
And still live in a place that is where you don't feel as free, but you have a different freedom to participate on the web or in community outside of those walls. And so we've begun to break down some barriers and some boundaries that have separated us, either,
right,
you know, particularly physically, physical boundaries. But in this process, Maria, also the emotional, spiritual boundaries are checked off.
Exactly.
We all have created fences around our life.
Mm-hmm.
We've created our own boundaries around our soul, around our spirit, around our physical health. You know, and we created beliefs that support the reason for those fences, for those boundaries.
Exactly.
And the web is a great metaphor for us of how you just break loose.
Exactly.
Just like the printing press was.
Exactly.
You know, an opportunity. Nobody would have ever thought when they created that it would have the impact that it had.
Oh, no.
Of course, there's also timing for changes in consciousness. And to a large extent, to me, as I hear you, this is also what this is. It's an opportunity for human consciousness to once again make some big shifts. And because this is moving not just in the United States, but all over the world.
It's global. It is totally global. And I know some people who also say it's cosmic.
Right. It may be beyond us. Right.
Exactly.
And so calling on those who passed over, you know, to also be our guides in this process, the ancestors you talked about, but also, you know, the spirits who are available to us.
Yeah.
All the time, because we have access to infinite wisdom at any moment. So asking those who have less chatter going on in their lives because they've crossed over. For assistance, we're getting clear.
When I was Googling this postmodern renaissance, they also came across a blog site by a man named Trevor Morgan out of Canada. And he created this list of looking at characteristics of modernity and postmodernity. And, you know, modern times, I believe, are considered to have gotten kicked off by the invention of the steam engine.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and because that ushers in industrialization, and, you know, and so that becomes like the modern times. You go from old-fashioned to modern. And so now he's saying that we're actually leaving modern and we're going into postmodern. And I like this list I want to share this because it talks about what you were just saying in terms of the shift from, his first one is moderns look to experts for advice. Postmoderns look to their network. So, for example, when my mom would go to the doctor back in the day, or even when the doctor would come to our house, because, you know, for children, they would come to the house, you depended on that, solely on that person in regards to what was going on and what needs to be done. Now, if you have a little bit of folk medicine going on in the family, you know, you would use that. But you would call this doctor in for things that you didn't have information for, you were really scared about. And this person was like God coming in, and this is what you do. When I go to the doctor, before I go online, or I call up somebody who's been dealing with the issue, and I get as much information as I can.
Right.
Because when I go, I'm clear, I'm in charge of my body, and I want to know if this person can support me in my health and my healing.
In the way that you want to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then... we have a caller. Hello.
Hello.
It's Quania.
How are you doing, Jojo Pa? Yes.
I'm doing good. Say hi to Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. Nice to meet you.
Yes, Quania. It's great to meet you, too. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, Q, I'm going to go through the list real quick, and then I'll give you a chance to ask a question and chime in, okay?
Wonderful.
So back to the difference between modern and postmodern. He says modern is structured, postmodern is organic. I love that. And organic being that, you know, we just allow for the natural development of something rather than trying to manipulate it into a particular type of way. Modernism cares about being efficient. Postmodernism cares about being healthy. I love that. In other words, I don't have to work myself to death, you know. Modernism talks about principles. Postmodernism tells stories. Modernism is a symphony orchestra. Postmodernism is a drumming circle. Modernism is linear. Postmodernism is fractal. And both the drumming circle and the fractal piece is so going back to Africa in terms of tribal, indigenous, you know, experience. Modernism is ordered. Postmodernism is chaotic. And classical physics is modern. Quantum mechanics, and I'll add into there, theoretical physics is postmodern. Yeah, that's a great list. So, Q, talk to us. What you got, girl?
Actually, as you were talking, I was thinking of just the place that surrender plays in this time.
I should.
You know, and just wanted you to speak a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, I think that Tammy did a good job when she brought up this whole piece about taking some time. You know, just realizing, okay, things are really going fast, but I can just take a moment to breathe, to feel, to think, to question, to contemplate. And I just love her analogy about, you know, if you're snorkeling and the waves are up, but if you go down like 3 or 4 feet, there's this calmness that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the surrender piece is about. It is letting go of having to know. It's letting go of having to struggle in the waves, having to fight. And I want to emphasize that because, you know, this culture has just been so conditioned to fighting as a way, as a norm, in terms of how to be successful, how to be safe, how to win, you know. You know, so there's this element of violence that comes with what makes you a successful American or a member of the Western culture. And so surrender is about, no, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to fight the waves. I'm not going to try to control the waves.
Yeah.
I'm going to just let go. I'm going to float, and I'm going to go down. I'm going to go deep, and I'm going to really learn more about the truth. You know, so this is a time for surrender. And some of that is that, you know, we get so caught up in routine, and we get so caught up in trying to do it the way we've always done it. And a lot of times it's about, let me take my plan and set it aside and let me open up to actually experiencing and being present to a situation, to learn, to be curious, as Tammy said, and that's one of the love postures, curiosity and excitement. and to step into that versus the arrogance and the anxiety, which is a fear posture, but let me surrender to that not knowing, so that I'm more able with, you know, all of this change to really learn what is going to work best at this time. And what works best today, it may not work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because changing so fast.
I
think, you know, to kind of add to what Joseph was saying, for me, seeing surrender as a sacred choice, as a spiritual principle, as opposed to a giving up.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how it's so often cast in our culture, that like somehow I surrender, you know. there's always a lot of things, you know, like the baby that finally cries itself to sleep because it's just so tired of crying. And the kind of surrender I think that we're talking about here is the surrender of choice, the one that says, oh, I know that if I just stop the resistance and just let it be, that what I will get from this is so magnificent that I'm willing to put aside all of this nonsense that's going on in my head about the what ifs. What if I let go? What if I, you know? And so it's more of a giving in to the process as opposed to a giving up.
Right.
And it's, go ahead. Add some of your thinking to this, too.
I was just going to say also what popped up when you were speaking was, I know at one point Judge Apana are talking about this, you know, in times of change, sometimes it requires a sacred surrender, or not surrender, but sacred sacrifice. You know, the letting something go that means something to us, and not in the form of a martyr of, you know, I'm leaving this and I got to give it up.
Shaving my hand.
I would like Judge Apa, for you to just kind of explain the difference between the two, because I think you give a really good explanation of the difference between, you know, when we're sacrificing out of that victim consciousness and when we're doing a sacred sacrifice.
Right. Exactly. And you know, the difference really gets back into the difference between being willful and being faithful. And willfulness comes out of ego. And as Deepak Chopra so wonderfully and deliciously says, ego means edging God out. And, you know, just the other week I had that experience of my ego jumping up when there was something that I wanted to happen at a certain time in a certain way. And I was getting more angry and more angry and more angry. And, you know, finally I realized, oh, my goodness, you're trying to control something that, you know, you have no control over. How smart is that? And then I was able to breathe and I was let go. And, you know, I did a sacred sacrifice of letting go of what I believe was how it was supposed to be, and to open up and learning how it really is. And my blood pressure went down, and, you know, everything fell into place. I also had the experience, and I love this one, where I had made up a budget for the month. And I had figured out from all the little different money streams I have going on that I could cover this and I could cover that and I'll cover this. And I had everything mapped out. My mother would have been so proud of me, right? And I'm bragging about this. And thank God for Queen Noor, because she said to me, would you repeat that back and this time really listen to yourself? Because I had really convinced myself that I had it figured out, that I knew what monies were going to come in and what they were going to be used for, and I made no allowance for what could happen, you know, the glitch in the system. And it was really cool, because what actually does happen once I did sacred sacrifice and said, you know what, it may appear that I have this figured out, but God may have other plans. Let me take my little budget, put it into the drawer, and now let's learn what's really going on. And, you know, someone called me up who was in need of borrowing $100. And, you know, according to my plan, I couldn't do that. So I was able to loan this person the money and just let go and open up to, okay, let's see how some more money could come in rather than being staying stuck in what I believe was. And again, this totally goes against our economic system.
Right.
You know, our economic system is based on how I was behaving with my ego about, I got this all figured out. This is going to come at this time, and this is going to come at this time. And I made no allowance for the fact that somebody might need help. Somebody might call on me for some help. Or even that maybe something I was expecting to come in wasn't going to come in. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I believe we're in a recession where our system is collapsing, is because there is so much radical change and rapid change going on that a system that doesn't allow for a flexibility, that doesn't allow for God's timing, that wants to stay on man's timing, it's going to crash. There's no way. There's no way it can continue to go. So that sacred sacrifice, as you say, I believe is our salvation in moving forward out of these mechanized industrialism-based ways of being in the world and of relating to each other and relating to how we, you know, run our institutions and run our businesses.
And, you know, also, Dr. Pai, I heard as you read that list, for me, what struck me, too, was a moving away from the intense masculine energy to the divine feminine.
Yes.
And to more of a nice balance.
A balance, exactly.
Of the divine feminine and masculine.
Exactly.
And so that, you know, hopefully it's, you know, it's allowing us to grab the best of both of those worlds and create something just magnificent in the future.
Exactly. You know,
I think
because
also that sacrifice has the faith of something greater.
Yes.
Yes.
You know.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, I think another part of sacred sacrifice is you don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
You're actually stepping out on faith. You know, you're being like Indiana Jones, and I think it was the third one that they did of Indiana Jones, where he comes to this chasm, and he's been told by the map that he's got to get across this chasm to the other side. And he doesn't see any way to cross over, but he has to just take that leap of faith, and he puts his foot out. And when he brings it down, bang, this bridge, you know, kind of magically appears. And, you know, that's to me such a good description of how we're being asked to be with ourselves, with our lifestyles, with our businesses, you know, with our relationships even, is to keep taking these walks of faith. To let go of the knowing, to let go of needing to know in order to move forward. I think that is so important. Yeah.
And
scary.
Surrender is, as you said, it is about surrendering with trust, knowing that in that surrender, trusting that whatever is there for you is for your highest and best good. And that it will transform into something that you have, you know, that will create a greater opportunity.
Yeah. And it goes back to purpose, you know, which is why in this Nature Year, the falsehoods are being exposed and being, you know, shown up. Because to accomplish purpose, to be aligned with purpose, and even to remember that you're here for a purpose, that you are valuable, you have got to be able to evolve. You know, evolution is required for being involved in purpose. And Tammy, as you know, I don't even look like I did when I met you about 20 years ago. You know, and it's not just that I've matured. You know, I didn't use the word aging. Not that I've matured, but I have aged. But it's that, you know, there's something different about me. And the same thing with you. You know, you've evolved from
well, you
from
have
where
a,
you were.
You have a radiance to you that is just palpable.
I should.
I love being in your presence. And you had the beginning of that 20 years ago, but it is just so present all the time in you. And so it's just lovely to witness that and to just be, you know, a partner with you on this journey. And I have to tell the listeners, though, that when I first met you years ago, I did not realize what a movie buff you were. I hope you don't mind, but I love to watch movies. I said, I sleep through anything. You've got the back bedroom.
Turner Classic Movies.
Yeah.
And then when they replayed The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, my God.
Maria and her sister called her from New York, and they sang every song. And they would hear enough during the commercials, and then one of them would call the other one back from Milwaukee to New York, and it was quite a spectacle. With such a great treat to see one side of you. So that's why I think you're... One of your most wonderful segments of the show is about, you know, illumination in movies.
Oh, right? Yeah, enlightenment in a movie.
Right.
Totally, totally. But, yeah, you know, it's this piece of evolving, and it's scary to do. It's a hard thing to do. And, you know, I have a friend right now who is being evolved through love, and love in a way that she never thought that she would experience or know. Mm-hmm. And it has affected her long-term relationship. It has affected how she thinks about the work that she does. And it's just amazing to really watch her, you know, go through this evolutionary process. And, you know, it has such purpose. It's moving her into a place to be able to love and value and appreciate herself so that the work that she shares with the world is real and true and deeply authentic. So, you know, this is the time that we're in. We're just in this time of change, of a renaissance. Things are dying. Things are being reborn. And it's fabulous. It's scary, but at the same time, I think it's fabulous. And we have about 3 minutes left. So, Tammy, I want to ask you if you have any closing comments for our listeners out there.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be with you in person for this. And I have, you know, something for people to consider and maybe send back to you, Maria, or Georgia Pyle, is I was thinking about how many words we could create for love.
That's it.
And if we kept those little post-it notes around the house every day, so just how many we could generate in our, you know, that, because I think that we don't necessarily share all the different ways in which we could view love.
Exactly. And that too,
I'm going to start by saying how much I cherish you and our friendship.
Ashe, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. Juanita, you got some closing words for us?
Thank you for, you know, showing up and doing the work. And I just always feel so blessed to have an opportunity to learn from you and just appreciate it. So just standing in gratitude.
You are so welcome. And I want to thank all the listeners out there for listening in and being my virtual audience so that I have a place for this wisdom that I keep to land. Of course, I want to again thank Tamara and Juanita for being here and calling in and joining in on the conversation and enriching the thoughts and the ideas here. Thank you so, so very much. I want to thank Brother Forrest and Brother Jason at Black Hole Radio, along with all the other wonderful hosts, for their commitment to serving the community, to being inclusive, to being enlightened. And a plug for our website, it's www.blackholeradio.com. Hole is spelled WHOLE.com. Please go there, join up, like us, help us really spread the word. Next week, I'll be back with Wisdom for Men on Monday, August 4th, with a guest I believe that is going to come on. I have to get a finalization from him, but it's a wonderful, wonderful elder in my community. And last but not least, I want to thank my creator, my ancestors, all the loving entities that walk with me, that keep me grounded, that keep me open, that keep me able to do this important, important work. I am very, very grateful again and blessed to have been with you tonight, and I look forward to being with you again next week. Have a blessed, blessed rest of the week. Ashe. Bye-bye.
I remember when radio used to be just like this. You turn on the radio and you actually get something for your money worth, even though it's free. You didn't have to pay for no satellite radio back then. You had good, good, solid radio for your brain, something that make you think. I remember. Now that's that black hole radio, or Blog Talk Radio.